Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Barely Backcountry Podcast. Today we got Travis Nowotny on, who is the founder of Goat Knives. We had a really good conversation just about hunting in general, what some of the keys are to having consistent success out in the field. There's not many people that are more successful than Travis Nowotny when it comes to hunting, so he's definitely somebody you want to listen to in that aspect. He also kind of broke down the Goat Knives lineup. We talked about what it was like starting that business, some things to come from him in the future. If you guys are in the market for a new hunting knife, whether you like a replaceable blade knife or a fixed blade knife, definitely check out Goat Knives. They have some of the best, some of the lightest weight knives out there. Phenomenal blades. I can't wait to get my hands on some soon. So make sure you guys check those out. First things first, I do want to apologize. I forgot to turn on my external mic for this podcast, so it's just recording straight off my iPhone. So I apologize if the audio isn't as good as it is in some of the other podcasts. But before I get you guys into that conversation with Travis, if you guys want to check out the podcast social media, it's barely_backcountry_podcast on Instagram. And then my personal is c.dillashaw. Make sure you guys give the podcast a like, a follow, a share, all those good things. But without any further ado, I'll get you guys into the podcast with Travis. All right, guys. Welcome back to another episode of the Barely Backcountry Podcast. Today we got Travis Nowotny on. He is the founder of Goat Knives, a big-time hunter and just a straight-up killer. If you look at his Instagram, success photos in one season than more people might have in their whole life. So, Travis, if you want to introduce yourself, we can get started.
Yeah, my name's Travis, obviously, but I'm just a hardcore bow hunter. I live here in Idaho. Really live for hunting and especially bow hunting. I'm an electrician here. That's my primary job. So, nice. Goat Knives on top of that. So we specialize in making ultranight hunting knives. So
awesome. Well, before we get into what you're doing now, let's go back to the beginning. I want to hear kind of what your childhood was like. Were you in the outdoors and into hunting from the beginning, or where did that all start?
Yeah, I've always been involved in the outdoors, you know, at a young age. My dad took me hunting and fishing, you know. My first love was probably fishing. And then as I got older and got a little more trustworthy and I could tote around a BB gun, then pretty much all the birds and squirrels in the neighborhood were in trouble. So
you were born and raised in Idaho?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So where did the bow hunting start for you? You mentioned you're a big time bow hunter. That's kind of one of your main passions. Where did that all start for you?
I'd say, well, a lot of it was, I was just infatuated with animals and hunting from the get go. For whatever reason, I just had a burning desire to hunt. And I remember as a kid, we had Primetime Outdoors. It was on our satellite dish or whatever, so I'd always watch hunting shows, and it seemed like they were always bow hunting whitetails and stuff like that, and I really just loved watching the flight of the arrow and the impact and how it would, just that whole thing, like, really stuck with me. And one of the things as a kid, like, my dad was super a stickler on, you know, he didn't want me to run around with a gun as a kid, just because, for my safety. So, but I was able to get away with a bow and arrow. So I think that's where that really stemmed from. I was able to get my first bow was just a long bow. I think I ordered it from like a Boy Scout catalog, but And the more and more I shot that bow, I just really became in love with it. So
nice. Nice. So were you able to, did it start with big game, or did you just kind of go out and you were shooting rabbits and squirrels out of trees, or what was learning for you as far as bow hunting?
Yeah. So I grew up in a small town called Salmon, Idaho, and we had a bunch of BLM within walking distance from my house. So pretty much every day after school and every chance I got, I was up there trying to shoot cottontail rabbits and call in coyotes and pretty much any critter that was around my house. I was trying to, you know, to kill with my little stick bow, but
yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So I mean, so you said your first setup was a stick bow. When did you make that transition over to a compound, and what was that first setup like? I'd imagine it's nothing like what we got today.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think I really liked the longbow, but it seemed like everybody on TV, like I said, I was just infatuated with any kind of... I remember I got a hold of some Eastman's hunting journal catalogs as a kid, and I just absolutely loved those. I could flip through those things and see pictures of people that had hunted elk and deer, and, you know, and especially from TV, you know, it seemed like all the whitetail hunters used a compound bow and, you know, a release and that kind of thing. So I think, I want to say it was about, I was about 8 years old when I got my first compound, and
okay.
It was a bear. No, that's wrong. It was a, Martin. I want to say Bobcat or Wildcat or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, and it had these gold fixed pins that I had to paint the very tip of it with a white fingernail polish so that I could actually see my pins.
Yeah.
I didn't have a peep or anything. And actually that first bow I had, I never even had a release. I just three finger under shoot it with some aluminum arrows, some Game Getter.
Yes. Yeah, XX75.
That's it. 100%. Yep. So
nice. That's cool. So what was kind of, I guess, what was your like learning experience as far as big game hunting? Was your dad out there showing you how to hunt, or were you just out there kind of figuring it out on your own?
So my dad was a big rifle hunter, and, you know, he was great in the sense that he always took us kids, even though we probably made it harder for him to harvest anything. Me and my two brothers tromping around in the hills, you know, being cold and making too much noise. But I would say a lot of my learning, I guess, was just trial and error, just trying to kill rabbits and everything around my house. I remember when I first turned 12 and I could hunt big game, I was just absolutely ecstatic to be able to go try and kill something with my bow. And there was a late season unit that was basically like 3 miles from my house, so I threw my bow on the front of my bike on my bicycle, and I rode 3.5 miles, and I had to cross this bridge to get in the other unit, and there was a lot of whitetails and stuff like that, and I was able to kill my first whitetail, a doe. It was actually a fawn, spot and stock. And
wow.
After I did that, it was, I mean, it was on. So
nice. That's cool. So I mean, from there, what was it? Did it just kind of snowball from there? When did you start doing like the backcountry type hunts, or are you still mostly hunting front country type stuff, or what are you doing now?
Yeah. I mean, I do everything, like, from backpack hunts to hunting from my pickup. But, if I remember right, my very first, I would guess, backcountry hunt, well, sort of, I was probably like 14, and there was a cow elk hunt that was open and an archery deer hunt that was open at the same time. So I could shoot a cow with a rifle, or I could shoot a deer with my bow. And I talked my dad on a Friday night to drop off me and one of my friends, growing up, Brian Keller, just out of town, a couple miles out of town. He parked us just above some private property there where some alfalfa fields were. And I knew a bunch of elk and stuff were going in there just from driving around with my dad. And that was kind of my first experience doing that. I think I don't even think we had tents. We just threw our sleeping bags out and slept on the ground, and pretty scared all night, you know.
Yeah.
Didn't know much about it, but we went for it. So
nice.
Yeah.
What was some of like that early gear that you used? You mentioned you didn't have tents, but in comparison to the backpacking gear that we have nowadays, what were you using then?
Well, I would say when I really got into like the backpack hunting, I was a little older. I was probably, I hunted as much as I could in my younger years, but until I was able to drive for myself, I was pretty limited. But I remember when I finally got my driver's license, and I was, you know, like I said, hunting was, any magazine or DVD or, well, I guess back then it was VHS, anything I could get my hands on, I was watching. And a lot of this stuff, I really liked Cameron Haynes back in the day. And I remember as soon as I was able to scratch up enough money, I had a little outdoor research bivy sack. And I pretty much just bought everything he had, you know. I mean, yeah. I even had a camo Under Armour beanie, you know, everything that he had, that was pretty much on my gear list.
No, I can definitely relate to that. I got into hunting right around the time that he became more mainstream, you know, was hanging around guys like Joe Rogan and John Dudley and all that. So, I mean, I bought his, you know, backcountry bow hunting book, read that front to back multiple times. My first bow was a Cam Haynes edition Hoyt. And yeah, I went deep down that rabbit hole of, you know, kind of like you did, just buying everything that Cam Haynes did. You know, at the time he was shooting Muzzy Trocar broadhead, so that's what I shot. And so definitely, yeah, I can totally relate to that.
I had that same backcountry bow hunting book, and I read that thing cover to cover and took notes. And really, anybody that, I mean, even, you know, watching the old Will Primo's videos, him hunting elk and stuff like that. I mean, I learned a lot from those guys, just being able to watch that stuff and have it out there as a kid and be able to take what I learned from TV and magazines and then apply it to my own hunting. And I think, you know, what really helped for me is, you know, just that repetition as a young kid and having that burning instinct to, I don't know why. I mean, it for me, there's no doubt it's an instinctive thing. I didn't just, like, I was born to hunt, and I had a burning desire to kill, and I still do. I don't really quite understand it, but life for me wouldn't quite be the same if I didn't have that. So
definitely. Yeah. At what point was it? Cause I mean, like I said earlier, somebody can look at your social media and see that you're very consistently successful on your hunts. At what point did that kind of start for you where you were almost, I don't want to say past the learning point, cause I'm sure, you know, you learn something every time you go out, but what was that point where you were consistently having success?
I want to say that was, I mean, I'd bow hunted quite a few years, but it was probably, man, I was definitely out of high school. I think I was out of high school a couple of years, and I think, you know, just being, you know, being out of high school, and I'd met my wife and stuff like that. So I wasn't really looking for girls or anything like that. And I could really focus on hunting. And that's when it really kind of started to come together for me. And just putting in the work and had that desire to get out there and hunt hard. And, you know, I learned a lot from my mistakes. And I want to say it was like 2007. I for whatever reason, I'd killed a buck and a 6-point bull that year. And from that point on, I remember kind of up until that point, I'd always doubt a lot of the stuff I did. Like I would go to hunt and I would put like kind of a half-ass effort into it because I wasn't confident in what I was doing. Like I didn't think that my plan was a great plan, you know, and I always thought that, like, you know, I needed to have some amazing spot to be able to be successful and stuff like that. So I was constantly trying to find these amazing places. Well, is what I realized that year is I remember just working really hard and never giving up and you know, putting everything I had into each day hunting. And in the end, I was able to fill my tags. And I remember sitting back recognizing that I was like, hey, you know what, like when I come up with a plan, I just need to stick with it and see it through and be confident in what I'm doing, because I shoot my bow, I live for hunting. So when, you know, as far as that goes, like I was confident in my shooting skills and those kind of things. And it just took me realizing that, you know, if you put in the hard work and dedication and you're confident in what you're doing, that eventually you're going to get that opportunity. So
definitely. Yeah, I mean, I could see that just on the hunts that I've been on, and even just the ones I did, you know, this past fall. I mean, my cow elk hunt in Nevada, and I'm hunt with a rifle in the rut, so I wasn't expecting it to be super hard to find animals, but I had a lot of confidence going in there and hunted hard every second of every day. And then, you know, less than a month after that, I had a coos deer tag down here in Arizona and didn't have any confidence in that. I, you know, had never hunted coos deer before, didn't put as much effort into scouting that as I should have. And during the hunt, didn't put as much time and effort into hunting all day like I should have. And I wasn't successful on that hunt. And, you know, and that's kind of been the story every year that I've hunted. The hunts that I really put the effort into and am out there every second of every day, I, you know, whether I kill or not, I have way more success in those hunts that I don't put that effort into. So that's definitely something.
That's one thing I would definitely know is, like, I get that a lot from people where they're like, you know, I don't, how are you so successful? You know, I don't understand it. Like, and it's hard for me to, I look back at, you know, I try to pinpoint the things that I do, but what it really comes down to is just hard work on a lot of it. Like, there's no gimmies, especially in bow hunting. It's just being consistent and being confident, doing what you can in the preseason, whether it's scouting, shooting your bow, and building those necessary skills so that when you get that moment of truth, you can make the most of it. And I think that's where I kind of shine, just in the sense that for whatever reason, I've paid attention to over the years of all that failure, all those little mistakes, you know, when to draw your bow, you know, not getting lazy and making sure I circle the entire mountain and get the wind right and don't take any shortcuts. And that's what's really in the end added up to success, all those little things.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely hard to do. I mean, especially if you're on, you know, day six or seven of a 7-day hunt and you've been getting your butt kicked all week, you want to, it's almost to a point where you just kind of want to get it over with, want to cut those corners, but you know, that might be the one opportunity where it pays off. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
What has kind of been your, do you have any, I don't want to say like secrets or anything like that, but like keys to success or just staying mentally in it throughout a hunt? Obviously we just, you know, talked about being there and, you know, working hard through the whole hunt is the key to success, but is there anything else?
I would say, I mean, a lot of it and most of it is that. I mean, just like my coos deer hunt this year that I just got back from, I mean, I was like day five into it. And for whatever reason, I woke up that morning. We didn't sleep very good that night. And I was kind of tired. And, you know, I still went out there and put in the work. And, you know, I was able to have things unfold and stick with it and do what I needed to do to get a shot and make it happen. And I just think, making the most of every day, even if you don't feel great or, you know, things are down, you know, whether the weather's socked in or whatever. And then just learning from those mistakes. Like I said, it seems like, especially in bow hunting, you can do 95% of everything right. Yep. And I would say most guys do this. But it's that last little 5% that separates the guys that are, you know, the 10%ers, the guys that are killing stuff, you know, consistently every year. And I just think it's those just very minute little things, you know, whether it's drawing at the right time or when it actually comes to making the shot, you know, having knowing what you're doing. Like, I mean, you ask a lot of guys to break down their shot and they wouldn't even know where to begin, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah. I think it's just those little things, really. It's just is what it is. So for me, anyway.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've only had one successful bow hunt in my short career of hunting. But every year, I mean, I can tell that I'm learning from mistakes. You know, getting a lot closer. You know, within bow range of animals compared to, you know, the first year I went hunting, I didn't even see an animal, and then the next year I wasn't able to even get within 400 yards. Just little things that, you know, paying more attention and actually being able to kind of read the animal and see if it's alert, if it's not alert, when's the right time to move and all that stuff during a stalk. And I, like you said, learning from those mistakes, and I can see it paying off for myself. And I think I'm kind of right. I'm almost to that point where I can consistently kill things. I'm not quite there yet, but I still have a long ways to go, but I can see things starting to change for me, you know, in each hunt.
Yep. Yeah. I would definitely say it's just the more experience you get, you know, the more you've been out in the field and you get to learn those animals. A prime example this year, like I had a One of my high school buddies came and hunted with us, and I haven't hunted with him in, I mean, like 20 years. But anyway, he's like, man, I'm excited to come and learn some things. And he's like, if he, he just wanted to learn some things, and see how I'd done it and things like that, And it's one of those things, it's hard to break down what you do. But I, on that hunt, I remember, so I was sneaking in on this buck, and I was probably, it's like 150 yards, and I was kind of, he was in a spot where I couldn't really get any closer. And it was just a buck, one coos deer, and a hot doe. And anyway, I was watching the buck in my binos, and I seen him pin his ear back and suck his nose in. And then I heard a snort wheeze. And I was like, and then he started stiff legging, and a stiff legged walking to the left. I'm like, oh, there's another buck right there. I know there's another buck right there. And sure enough, he starts walking over to the left, and I see this other buck. And the other buck kind of turns around and starts kind of heading the other way. And the buck that had that doe was very like aggressive towards that buck. Well, down to my left, there's this little saddle, and I instantly knew, like I recognized, I'm like, that buck's gonna run that other buck through that saddle. So I sprinted down there to made a big half circle loop to get down there. And no sooner than I got there, here come that buck over the saddle, just exactly like I knew was going to happen. And I would have never even had any idea that was going to happen if I hadn't had all that experience. I just, from learning over the years, I knew what to do, and I didn't ha have to think about it. I just, like, I knew what to do at that moment instantly, and that's what I did. It's just those paying attention to those little things and learning, over time and time and time, you it really does sink in. And as long as you can recognize that and recognize especially opportunities to close the gap, that's just going to lead to success.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, once you've done it enough, there's just a certain point of just trusting your gut, and it's just an instinct thing. And I had some of that on my cow elk hunt this year, kind of been, because I hunted the same herd for 3 days, and at a certain point, I knew exactly where they were going to be and knew a plan that I had to do to be successful, and it worked. So, just like you kind of just, you knew exactly where you needed to go. And I think that's a big thing. Once you get to that point in your hunting career, you'll kind of start to see that.
Yeah, there's definitely no mistake for time in the field. Like that's there's nothing that will replace that. Just getting out there and learning on your own, and really being confident in the skills that you have, whatever those are. If you're a really good shooter, then you should learn on that. If you're really good at finding animals, all those little strengths will just will help you in the tough times, and you can sharpen those skills as you get more experience, and you fail more, and you can just learn from those things. So
Definitely, definitely. Well, you kind of talked about it a little bit there with that coos deer hunt. Kind of want to get into what your 2022 hunting season looked like. I'm assuming it started with spring bear for you back in the spring.
yeah, I did. Yeah, I went, did some spring bear hunts. I was pretty limited on time this year, at least in the spring. Yeah, I went on a couple trips with some friends, and passed on some bears, and didn't end up killing a bear in the spring. And then I pretty much rolled to, let's see, some deer hunts. I had a Nevada deer hunt. I was able to go to the high country and kill a nice buck on opening day up there. And
Sure.
yeah, and then went into my elk hunting, killed a couple bulls, and yeah, it was a good year. So
Nice. Nice. Did you get any wolves last year? I know that's something that I see pretty often on your social media. You seem to get wolves fairly consistently.
I didn't, not
No.
last year anywhere anyway. So
What is that wolf population or wolf? I don't know if there is a problem up where you're at. Has it become a problem at all in your part of Idaho?
it used to be like before we could hunt them, it was a pretty bad problem. But now that we can hunt them, it's definitely it's helped out a lot. I see the elk herds coming back and stuff like that, and those wolves are so stinking smart, we're never really gonna put a dent in them. So
Yeah.
as long as we're able to keep them in check a little bit, I think things will be good. So it's kind of fun to have the opportunity to be able to go out, right now, or just in the winter, just to have something to do and go try your luck at trying to get on some wolves. So I love that opportunity.
Definitely. What kind of strategies are you using for that? Are you just kind of hunting them like most people hunt coyotes where they're calling them in, or what are you doing to have that somewhat consistent success on wolves?
I would say for the most part is just going to a good winter range where you know there's wolves, and once you know there's wolves there, it's just a matter of, you know, putting in your time and figuring out, you know, kind of a location that you think they're in, and just persistence. You know, I get up there and, you know, I just hunt hard in the morning. I glass all the ridges, and I, you know, a lot of times I don't even leave the highway. I just drive up the highway and glass everything I can and listen for wolves. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, come 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning, you'll hear a pack of wolves howl up a canyon, and you know there's some in there. So you load up your pack and, you know, hike back in there and go from there. And that's where I've had good success, is just actually getting out there and you know, trying to learn them. They're definitely a very tough creature because they travel so much, so there's a lot of luck in it, for sure.
Yeah.
But just with anything, I guess it's just persistence.
Yeah, definitely. That's cool. Have you started planning for 2023 yet?
Draw apps
are just starting, but what do you got? Anything big on the plans for this year?
I think I'm going to do an Alaskan moose hunt with one of my buddies. So, you know, doing a float hunt, try to bow hunt, kill a couple bulls. And I want to do, you know, my normal, I'm a resident of Idaho here. So
yeah,
I'll try to do my my deer and elk hunts and wolf hunts and bear hunts, everything I can. And I've got some points in Wyoming, so I'm hoping to get an early archery deer tag there. I always try to plan some early archery deer hunts, you know, from anywhere from August 15th to, you know, the first week of September. That's kind of that time slot. I really like to be hunting mule deer. And then after that, I'll hunt elk.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm definitely, I like to chase all the seasons. I like to hunt everything. So if I can squeeze in an antelope hunt in August, you know, I'll do that. If I can hunt whitetails in November, I'll do that. If there's a late season mule deer hunt in November or an elk hunt, like I really just, my strategy is just hunt as much as I can from August 15th to the end of the year. And, you know, so pretty much any tag I can get my hands on, I'm going to try to do it. So.
Yeah. That's usually my strategy as well. I'm still trying to plan out what I want this year. It'll be my last year as a Nevada resident before I swap over to Arizona where I'm at now. But so hopefully I can get my bull elk tag before I have to wait another 20 years to draw it.
Nevada.
But that's the big one on my list of hoping to draw that one. There's some places where I could probably draw a tag. It's just a matter of whether or not I want to draw it there or wait out a long time for a better hunt. But we will see what happens with there. If time and money allows it, I'd like to get up to Idaho for spring bear. I forgot to turn off the auto renew on my Idaho hunt license, so now I feel like I have to put that to use at some point.
Yeah, definitely.
So we'll see what happens. You mentioned you're going to Alaska, right?
Yeah, I think so. So
you doing that with a bow, or are you going to take a rifle on that one?
I'm going to take a bow. So
both.
Yeah, I drew a Shiras moose hunt back in 2006 here in Idaho, and I hunted the whole time. And there was like a week left of the hunt, and I'd seen these bulls clear up in this clear cut, and it was, you know, it's a once in a lifetime tag. And I was like, you know, I'd rather kill a bull than not. And, you know, that was about the time that it started to click for me. So I definitely wasn't a super great hunter or anything like that. So I took my rifle, and then that first day I end up calling in a big Shiras moose at shooting it at 30 yards with my rifle, you know. So I've always wanted to shoot one with my bow, so I figure this will be perfect to just dedicate to that and go, you know.
That's a dream trip for me at some point, is Alaskan moose with a bow. But in the area you're going to, is it like the four brow ties or tines are 50 inches wide regulation, or?
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, if you meet either of those requirements, if not both, that's a giant moose. So
yeah,
that's an upside and a downside about that
regulation is it limits the amount of moose you can shoot, or the amount of moose you can see that you can actually shoot. But if you shoot one, you know it's going to be a giant. So
yeah, yeah. I figure, I don't want to be hauling out, you know, a bullwinkle, a complete tiny one. So
yeah, yeah. But no, that'll be cool. And you're doing that on a float trip, you said?
Yeah, well, a little bit of a float trip. So
a little bit.
Yep. Right. So we'll definitely have rafts and everything. So
yeah,
we're still kind of in the planning mode, but it's one of those things we decided we're going to do it. So we're figuring it out, and nice. Hopefully it all works out in the end. So
nice. Is that's an over the counter tag, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. That is cool. How long are you planning on going?
I think 10 days is what we were planning on. So, yep.
Yeah. That sounds like a ton of fun, but.
Yeah, cool. I think it will, you know, that's one thing I'm going to try to do from here on out. And, you know, it's just one adventure hunt a year, whether it be going to a different state and trying something new. Like, I really want to do like an Oregon blacktail hunt, an archery blacktail hunt. So,
yeah.
But every year I want to try to, you know, I want to do my normal Idaho things that I can do every year, but I want to add at least one adventure hunt, whether it be caribou or moose or whatever, you know, coos deer hunt, you know, maybe even traveling to the Midwest or Kansas or something like that, doing a whitetail hunt, just something that I don't get to do all the time. And so,
yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the way things are going, I mean, who knows how much longer some of those opportunities will be around where you get to do that, you know, somewhat easily. So definitely something to do sooner rather than later.
That's exactly why I'm going on that moose hunt. So
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. On that topic, I know you're an Idaho resident, but what's your opinion on the non-resident over the counter system for Idaho?
Yeah. As far as like the hunter displacement, I think that's a good thing. Just from a resident perspective, you know, I don't know. It's pretty, I feel bad for those guys trying to get tags and
yeah,
like that. I don't know. That doesn't seem very cool to have to deal with, but you know, definitely being able to disperse the hunters here, like our elk numbers. Well, this is how I kind of see it. Like, so most, all these hunters from out of state, like where do they learn their information? They learn it from, you know, places like Huntin' Fool or Go Hunt, and I use those tools all the time. Well, a lot of times those magazines and a lot of the info that you get is all the same. So it'll say, you know, go hunt X unit in Idaho for, you know, 170 plus deer. Well, what's that do? Everybody from out of state goes to those same units and floods those units.
Yeah.
You know, and deer's a little different, but as far as elk numbers go, like, our elk are thriving throughout the state, like everywhere they're doing really good. So I feel like I could go at any unit in the state and find success if I'm able to learn that unit and put my time in. And I just think it's great for non-residents too, in the sense that, like, you know, really we have good elk hunting anywhere. So as long as you maybe even look at some of those less sought after units that you can get a tag in and learn the unit, and you're going to have a good hunt. So a lot of the deer hunts are a lot, you know, some of the hunts you might get aren't very good and they're a lot tougher because it's a lot of timber and stuff like that. But as far as that, I see it being a good thing, especially for, you know, some of the small town residents of those places where it just gets overrun with non-residents, you know. So I can kind of see where some guys get upset from the non-residents and stuff like that. So yes. I can kind of see where they're coming from, you know. Me personally, like, I don't have a ton of issue of running into guys. I don't know if it's just the style of hunting that I do or what, but I've never hunted in any places that are just absolutely overrun with hunters and residents. So I think if you're the type of guy that hunts off your four-wheeler and hunts the easily accessible stuff, you're gonna deal with pressure. So
yeah, I agree. I mean, there's definitely been some places where I've ran into other hunters, but you know, I try to get away from people as much as I can, but I'm certainly not opposed to hunting the road. I don't always do the backcountry stuff. In fact, I haven't done a backcountry hunt in 2-3 years now, and that's something I want to do this year. But yeah, I mean, and as far as the non-resident thing goes, I mean, I think it's I'm all for people getting out of their home state and going out and exploring new stuff. Like you said, you know, trying to do one adventure hunt a year, you know, whether that just be something, you know, as simple as, you know, most people go and do over the counter elk in Colorado. And, you know, for some people that's a big deal. And for some people it's not. So, but just getting out of state and just having those experiences.
Yep. So what do you think about the Idaho system? What's your opinion on it?
I think the way that they do the draw needs to be redone. Like you said, I mean, one, the system crashed on many, many people multiple times this year. And I don't think that gives everybody a fair shot at it. If that's what's happening.
Yeah.
I'm not against the way that they're going about it as far as tag allocations or anything like that. I just think it needs to be a more fair system and ran a little bit better than it has since they introduced it.
Yeah. You know, one thing that, yeah, I totally agree with that. One thing I heard this from someone that works in the system within the fish and game, and you know, they're really liking the system because, you know, so say you just want a tag and you go in and you get this deer tag or whatever, and then you decide as it gets closer to the hunt, maybe you drew a hunt in a different state or something like this, and you're like, I don't want to go hunt this, you know, I don't even know where it's at, like, or my buddies didn't get it too, so I can't go with my buddy. So you go ahead and turn the tag back. If I'm understanding it correctly, they're going to keep a certain percentage of that. Well, there's, you know, as the refund of the tag, you don't get all your money back from what I understand.
Yeah.
And then they go ahead and they resell the tag and reissue it. Well, on a lot of these things, this has happened, like they're selling these tags three times, I guess. So they're getting a lot of income. So from this, so I don't know if it's just completely like a money hungry thing or what, but you know, I would think that it would be a lot better just to do, you know, a draw system and not have everybody in line and stuff like that. If you draw, you draw, and they pay a little extra for an application fee and they get their money that way. But you know, as far as that goes, I really don't know.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know how the odds would work, but I wouldn't be surprised if you did turn them into a draw that most of them would be, you know, like a 0 to 2 point draw. So you're still getting that opportunity. It's just not technically over the counter.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah. And we're kind of going through that same thing down here in Arizona with the new deer quota system and all that stuff, and limiting the number of non-resident over-the-counter tags for 2023. And I'm assuming they'll continue that going forward. But I mean, I work at a local archery shop, and it seems, I would say, the majority of people aren't happy with it. I think I'm one of the few that is probably, I don't know if happy with it is the right word, but I understand exactly where they're coming from with all these new regulations and am in favor of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I understand states that cater to the residents, and that's really how it should be. Like if you live in a home state, your opportunity for hunting should be greater than everybody else's. Like that's just, you work there, you pay taxes there. That's just how it should be. So I agree with that. So I don't, you know, if I have any opportunity in other states, I'm just lucky to have those. So,
yeah, definitely. And I think most of the people, at least here in Arizona, the guys that I've seen that are upset with it are the guys that have been hunting that one little spot for the last 20 years and don't want to have to deal with going out and learning a new spot. And to me, I mean, and I get it. I'm, you know, still young in my hunting career, and you know, I haven't learned a spot yet, so I still have the ability to go out and you know, find different spots and all that stuff. But I don't know, it just seems like what I tell everybody is, like, it's just another opportunity to go out and learn a new spot, learn a new unit. Like, there's still plenty of hunts still open in Arizona. Like, the majority of the units local to us are closed, but there's still a couple that are open. Like, it may not be as good of a unit, and there may not be as many deer out there, but it's still an opportunity to go hunt.
Yep.
So, but, and we'll see what happens. And I saw something going around social media this weekend, and I don't know if it's true or not. I haven't verified it yet, but I saw something where if a Arizona deer unit fills its quota 2 years in a row and they have to close that unit down, that it's going to become a draw hunt. Sure if that happens, I'm sure you're going to get more and more people upset, but.
Yeah, I really like hunting coos deer down there, and I want to be able to do that every year. I wonder how that's going to work as far as if it did go for a draw. I would imagine most people want to go archery hunt mule deer. So
yeah,
probably would be better for me, you know, as far as would guarantee a tag. I wouldn't have to get on there at midnight and watch all the tags tick away and have not be able to check out in my cart and be freaking out because I already bought plane tickets and you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if within 5 years, there's no more over the counter hunts in Arizona, but I think even if it goes that way, the majority of those hunts are going to be, you know, those 0.1 point draws. Yeah. So, especially for coos deer. I mean, I picked up my rifle coos deer this tag this year as a non-resident with 0 points. So I'd imagine an archery one for a unit that used to be over the counter is going to be, you know, 0 points.
Yeah. And I was looking at like most of those units, there's like so many tags left and those, you know, they're not getting filled. Cause I mean, they're hard little suckers to kill. So,
If a unit's closed, more than likely it's closed for mule deer and still open for whitetail.
Yep.
With the exception of a few, but I mean, most of those units down by the border are still open. So I would imagine that those ones will probably stay over the counter for quite a while, but
yeah,
we'll see what happens with that.
Yep.
But well, real quick before we end this, I definitely want to talk about Goat Knives, a company that you started a few years ago. I was actually working at Go Hunt when we brought you on to that gear shop.
Okay.
So there's a little bit of connection there to that. I think I might have actually, I don't think I was yet. I don't think I built those product pages on the website originally, but I'm sure I definitely worked on them at some point down the road. But tell me a little bit about how that started for you, where that idea came from and all that.
Well, for the most part, you know, it kind of started with our flagship knife, the Capra Hunter TI, and it really came from just me being one of those guys that's super nuts about just taking the bare minimum in the field, not packing more than I need to. So I had this idea of basically having a replacement blade knife that was made from titanium that you could also use as a jig to be able to put Allen keys in to be able to use that as an Allen wrench. So in the field, if, you know, I was backpacked 10 miles into some unit and my sight came loose or something like that, I could redial in the field, or, you know, a limb bolt was loose or my tripod leg was loose, I could tighten it up and feel good about not throwing a big old heavy set of Allens in my backpack. You know, I could, like me, I take like, I think it's like 6 different Allen keys. I can basically fix anything, any piece of gear, whether it be a tripod or base plate or anything like that in the field. So I basically, you know, I came up with that idea, and it was one of those things that just kept coming up and kept coming up. And I was like, you know what? I have to see this through and build it. And I did, and took it to market, and it did really well. So
nice.
I just kept it coming. I, you know, we've got some fixed blades out there, and the new Ibex, a super light titanium replacement blade knife that's less than an ounce. It's got that 1/4 inch drive hole that you can fix stuff in the field, you know. It's just one of those things, like it's a necessity in the fact that you know, you, less is more as a bow hunter, you know, the less you have to pack on your back, the better. So it was one of those things, I just stuck with it and brought it to market, and it's just done really well. So
that's awesome. What was that design process like? Was it pretty much all you just kind of sitting down with a notepad and drawing it out, or were you going back and forth with, you know, guys that have backgrounds in engineering or whatever to design that, or how did that all happen?
No, it really just came down with me sketching it out and coming up with an idea and figuring out the process of how to bring it to life. You know, I made phone calls. I'm like, this is what I'm wanting to do. And they're like, well, what are you calling me for? You need to get a hold of this guy, you know? And that's pretty much just learning that process. And, you know, it definitely, I spent a lot of money and a lot of time running around before I ever had my first prototype in hand. But it was one of those things, I knew, even if it failed and it cost me a ton of money, at least I, you know, I gave it a shot, and I could feel better about, you know, just seeing it through to see that it failed or it did well. So,
yeah, definitely. That's cool. What is the manufacturing process like for you? Are you building all those knives, or is that outsourced, or how does that work?
So no, everything's done by, you know, a local water jet and machine shop and a knife grind and heat treat and a Cerakote guy and a laser logo guy. So it's a process. It's definitely a process, but everything's basically outsourced. All the fixed blades are actually all assembled by me. So, you know, I Loctite every screw and tighten it on there and torque it to spec, you know, as far as that goes. But we're growing at such a rapid rate where we're actually this year, I'm not going to be doing that anymore. So we're going to have, we're basically have, someone else that'll be outsourced. So
very nice. That's cool. What has kind of been your experience as far as like starting a small business and growing it and all that? What has that been like for you?
It's a lot of work. And it's hard when, you know, it's not your bread and butter as far as that goes. So, you know, an electrician, that's my day job. And, you know, that's what pays the bills and does things. And, yeah, it's definitely, it's one of those things you just got to have a passion for it and like to be involved in the hunting industry and find that is success, you know, cause, yeah, it just takes a lot of time growing a company like that. So
yeah,
definitely been a learning experience for me. I thought it was just I was going to come up with this idea and the money's just going to be flowing in, but you know, you got to keep that money put back into the company to continue to grow it. So,
yeah.
And that's kind of how it's been. So,
yeah, but yeah, I mean, your company has definitely grown. Like I said, I mean, I was, you know, there when I saw it at the beginning at Go Hunt, but now, I mean, I'll see your guys' knives in Sportsman's Warehouse and all that stuff. So it's definitely cool to see how much you've grown.
Yeah, it's been great. You know, I think the future is going to be even better as far as just new designs. And, you know, as we grow, we have more money and more ability to innovate. And that's what we're going to continue to do. So
very nice. That's cool. Do you have any plans for the future? Obviously, I don't want you to spill all your secrets out here, but do you plan on expanding past knives, or is it kind of just always going to be a knife company?
I think just a knife company for the most part. I've definitely we've got a broadhead in the works, so but
that'll be interesting.
Yeah, as far as that goes, for the most part, cutting utensils is where we're gonna stick it, keep it. Yeah. But who knows what the future holds? You know, I get some harebrained idea. I might just have to see it through.
There you go. That's cool. But yeah, you guys make some really cool knives. Your guys' fixed blades are definitely ones that I want to check out. Personally, I'm just not a huge big on any of those like Havlon 60A style blade knives. I just don't like the blade itself. I'm sure the Capra, you know, knife is phenomenal, obviously, but I just not a huge fan of those blades. But your guys' fixed blade knives definitely interest me, and I need to get some hands on them at some point.
Oh, I hear you there. There's guys that are just, you know, complete fixed blade guys, and then there's guys that, you know, don't care either way. And
yeah,
that new chamois that we have is an awesome knife. I think it's the best of both worlds, you know, having a nice set of knife scales on there to give it that nice comfort, but yet it's still very petite and just as minimal as can be and still get the job done. So
very nice. What kind of steel are you guys using on that?
So everything up to this point has been nitro vanadium, nitro V, just because I really like its properties as far as you know, it's easy to sharpen and it holds an edge for a long time. So it's great.
Nice. What kind of, like, how often during, if you were to say to break down a bull elk or something, how often are you having to like resharpen one of those knives, assuming it goes in, you know, razor sharp to begin with?
So if you go in razor sharp, you can break down a bull. And when you get home, you're going to have to, you know, tune it up a little bit to get best performance. So I've actually, with my Turcarbon Pro,
I broke down basically all my critters for one season in it, and I was really having to work at it at the end, but it did it, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not super great at sharpening or anything like that. Like, I get a lot of requests on how to sharpen and stuff like that, and I've just got, like, a little Lansky. So when I get home, it's got a basically a little jig that it's got that 19 degree bevel, and that's what I have. And I kind of use that because it's kind of foolproof. I can just run through that kit at that 19 degrees on my bench, and it's just razor sharp real quick. So totally worth it, you know, especially that knife. You can take it in the field and do everything you need to do, and then when you get home and you got some time, you can put a nice edge on it. So
awesome. Do you guys have like a service where somebody could send their knives back to you to resharpen, or?
I've thought about that because Millet Knives, the knife grind company that does our initial grind and sharpening and everything, they could totally do it. But
it's
one of those things I just haven't done yet. But yeah. I've definitely thought about it, and it might be something that happens in the future. So
awesome, cool, man. Well, it was definitely good talking to you. Like I said, I want to get some hands on those knives. You know, put one of them to use hopefully this season. But before I let you go, two questions I ask all my guests is one for a book recommendation. So is there one you got for us?
Oh, I would say the last book I listened to on Audible was that Cameron Haynes Endure. I love that. I don't know anybody that doesn't like that guy. The guy's just a stud, and he definitely motivates people, and you know, that was just a great listen. So
yeah. Well, if you go read his Instagram comments, there's apparently a lot of people that don't like him for whatever reason, but I enjoy listening to him and all that stuff. But
oh yeah, I've liked him from the very beginning, and I've always felt like if you don't like him, then you know, you're just jealous. So
yeah, definitely. But yeah, I'm a big fan of anything he puts out. I saw he has a podcast coming out pretty soon, so I'm excited about that.
Oh, yeah. Anybody that's positive like that, that's out there to inspire people, I just, you know, kudos to them. I just think that's great. So
definitely. Cool. Well, and then last question before I let you go is for a guest recommendation. Somebody you think that could teach people some things, inspire some people, something like that.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's a tough one on the spot. There's so many guys maybe out like there.
I don't know if you got a good hunting partner or somebody within the knife industry or something like that that you think could tell some good stories.
Oh, I've got a great one. One of my best friends, my hunting partner, Rick Palmer, would be a great one. But he's one of those guys that's not hardly on social media, and he doesn't. It's totally not his jam, so it'd be really hard to get him on here. But I would definitely recommend him. So
there you go. Is he the one you're going to Alaska with, or?
No, that's another one of my hunting buddies. But Rick's definitely a killer, and I've learned a lot from him myself. So
cool, man. Well, before I let you go, let people know how they can find you, how they can find Goat Knives, all that good stuff.
Yeah, you can find me just on Instagram. It's just my name, Travis_Nowotny. And you can, same thing with Goat Knives. We've got a Goat Knives page on Instagram and or goatknives.com. So yeah, check us out. You can even go to Sportsman's or Shields and walk in and touch and feel our knives and you know, see if it's something you might be interested in. So
awesome, man. Well, Travis, thank you so much for coming on. Had a great time talking with you, and good luck in your 2023 hunting season and draw applications, all that stuff.
You too, Caleb. Thanks for inviting me on. It was great talking to you. So
awesome, man. Anytime. Cool. Well, I will talk to you later, and you have a good night, man.
You too. Have a good one.
Bye.
All right, everybody. I hope you guys enjoyed that podcast with Travis Nowotny. Hopefully you guys can learn something out there that'll help you be more successful out in the field. And I hope you guys check out the Goat Knives if you're in the market for a new hunting blade. Like I said, they make some of the best, some of the lightest hunting knives out there, whether you're in the market for a replaceable blade knife or a fixed blade knife. Definitely give Goat Knives a look. Before I let you guys go, if you guys want to check out the podcast social media, it's barely_backcountry_podcast on Instagram. And then my personal is c.dillashaw. Make sure you guys give the podcast a like, a follow, a share, all those good things. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I will see you guys next week.